Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to our Platinum Group Coaching Call for the month of May. It's great to be here with you guys. And let's see, we've got a few of you on the line. We had three pre-submitted questions, but I'd like to try something a little different today. Before we go to these pre-submitted questions, before we go to live Q&A, I wanted to just check in with you guys and love to hear about any recent wins you've had. Now, let me explain what I mean by a win. If you have had anything in terms of a breakthrough, an idea, just any kind of improvement, any kind of aha moment, something that just has made you more encouraged in any way in your business, I'd love to hear about it. Anything essentially that helps you move forward, maybe improve your motivation, all that is a win. So if you'd like to share that with us, star 2 on your telephone keypad. You could do that at any time. Just let me know, or you can just type it in. If you're on the call page today, just type it in, and love to hear about it. So while I wait for those, please chime in, let me know, and I will start with questions that we got here. Let me move to that document. We got some great questions today. This first one is from Don. With some of these, I'm going to kind of paraphrase because there's some background, and I'm just going to summarize. So Don says, this has happened to me a couple of times already, and I'm starting to wonder what I'm doing wrong. I've gotten really far with two prospects recently. Both had big projects or a series of projects they needed help with. In both cases, I was almost 100% certain they were going to pull the trigger, so I stopped prospecting because either opportunity would have booked me solid for at least several weeks. But in both cases, the prospects disappeared off the face of the earth. Now I have very little in my pipeline. What am I doing wrong? Yeah, man, been there. I think many of us have been there. It's actually very common, Don. Without knowing more, it's hard to really diagnose every aspect of the problem, but I'd like to focus on something that you mentioned that I think could help you in future situations. And that is, don't stop prospecting until you have the project, okay? So very common to get with a prospect or be in a situation where they're kind of dragging you along, and it's a big opportunity, and you know that if this comes through, you're going to be booked solid for several weeks, maybe even several months. Maybe it's a retainer agreement. It doesn't really matter. You just know that this is going to keep you very, very busy, and it almost seems silly to continue marketing yourself or prospecting, at least for now, because if and when this comes through, you're just not going to have time to take on any more work. I know that's what's happened to me. This is obviously going to happen. And in many cases, of course, we're talking about it after the fact here. Hindsight's 20/20. But let's face it, you're emotionally involved. You want it really bad. You're getting assurances from your prospect or your client that this is going to come through. And sometimes it's an existing client. So you know them, and you know that they're true to their word. But things happen. We're waiting on the president or the owner to go ahead and do the final sign-off, but trust me, it's a done deal. We're going to get started as soon as that happens. Then it takes 2 weeks, and you followed up, no response, or maybe an email response, hey, we're still waiting. And then your contact, Jill over there, is suddenly on vacation, out of the country. Then she comes back, she's slammed. Long story short, it's been 6-8 weeks, and finally you get the dreaded phone call or email. I'm so sorry, Ed. This has been put on hold because of this, that, or the other. I didn't see it going this way, but this is just the way it is right now. I don't think it's a dead deal, but it's on hold for now. The problem is you haven't been prospecting for the past 6 or 8 weeks, and now your pipeline is really dry. So my suggestion, it's really got two elements to it. First of all, don't stop prospecting until you have the signed agreement, until it's a done deal. Second, when you get the – and this is the part that most people don't do. When you get the verbal go-ahead, hey, Ed, this is going to happen. I'm really excited. We're just waiting on this, that, or the other. there is a surge of excitement, right? You start feeling great about yourself and your business and, you know, what's ahead for you. Don't let that excitement go to waste. And rather than do what most of us do, which is stop prospecting, use that excitement to go ahead and do two things. Continue prospecting and follow up on opportunities that maybe you were a little bit fearful to follow up on, or you've been kind of ignoring, or maybe you haven't been that diligent to follow up. Two reasons for this. When you get a verbal like this, when you're feeling pretty good about the fact that this is going to come through, you have more motivation, you're more excited, and your confidence has gone up. It's just inevitable, right? Because of that, you're going to be much more effective with your prospecting. Prospects will sense this. Believe me, prospects sense your confidence. This is why when you're down in the dumps, you continue to be down in the dumps, because prospects can smell fear, they can smell anxiety and stress a mile away. But when you don't feel like you really need the work, for some reason, prospects are suddenly much more responsive. I think we've all been in situations like that, whether it's in business or in something else. When your confidence is up, when you don't feel like you need something, you're not emotionally attached to that outcome, you tend to perform way better than maybe you think you need to perform. You get better results. So use that. Use that. It creates a virtuous cycle that can only help you. And the other category, as I mentioned, is following up on opportunities that maybe you've been a little bit concerned to follow up with. Maybe because you knew, this is probably not going to happen. They haven't been responsive. I don't know. Should I follow up with this prospect? I don't feel like it. I don't think I could take a no right now. But when you have this newfound excitement and motivation and confidence, that's the time to do it, because for the same reason, you're just feeling better, and that's going to come through even over email, and you should absolutely do it. Now, the worst case scenario, and this is why most of us don't follow up, or most of us don't prospect, I should say, when these situations happen, is we don't want the scenario of, okay, now I have more than I can actually handle. But I want you to ask yourself a question. What would you rather have? Would you rather have the problem of too much work and now I don't know how I'm going to juggle all that, or I have nowhere near enough work and now I really got to scramble? Right? Seriously, pick one or the other. Which one would you want? And I think it's the former, right? It'd be silly to pick the latter. So the problem of having too much work is a great problem to have. You can figure it out. There's always a way. Sometimes you can negotiate deadlines. You can see if maybe you can push a start date. You can maybe refer some work to a trusted colleague, which, you know, hopefully you can create some kind of reciprocal agreement, and they can come back to you with a referral when they're booked solid. So there's a lot of different things you could do. I'd rather solve that problem than the problem, oh my gosh, I have no income projected this month because I just haven't been diligent. So anyway, so that I think that's really the biggest lesson here. Don, what I'd like to do is maybe if you can, in the forum, share some of the other details, and maybe we can look a little bit deeper into what might be going on in terms of why aren't these converting to clients, because it could be a conversion problem. Also, you're obviously good at generating leads, but you know that's only half of the equation. You also need to be able to convert some of these or most of these into clients. Okay, let's see. The second question from Mary. Mary says, I've been getting into situations where I'm chasing prospects that are not a good fit for me because of all the effort it took to get their interest. Am I looking at this the wrong way, or should I be better about screening prospects and moving on when they're not a right fit for me? Okay, if I'm reading this correctly, Mary, you're saying that you're chasing prospects that aren't a good fit for you, but the only reason you're doing it is because you work so hard to get their attention, to get them to raise their hand, so to speak, or to respond to a warm email or to a LinkedIn effort, that you feel, oh my gosh, I finally got a hit. I got to take this all the way to the finish line. And that is a very natural thing to do. A couple of points there. The first one is, your job when you're prospecting is not to convert every prospect or every lead to a client. Okay, so we just talked with a minute ago about the fact that there's two different things. There's generate the lead, and then there's convert your lead to a client, the prospect to a client. Those are two different steps. Your job is not to take every lead you generate to a client. Your job is to pursue only winnable opportunities. Now, when I say winnable opportunities, also another way to say is to pursue the ones that are a good fit. A good fit or winnable, I have to have several things. They got to be a right for you today, and they need to have a decent chance of closing. So if it's if this is not a situation where, you know, once you generate the lead and you engage in a conversation, you feel would be a good fit for you for whatever reason. Maybe their expectations are out of whack. Maybe you can't in terms of their budget is way off. There's just no way you'd be able to make it work. Yeah, you could reduce the scope of work, but that's you can't find something that's going to work for them. Or maybe they want things that you can't do or you can't offer, or they want a miracle worker, whatever reason. Just because you've taken it that far down the field doesn't mean you take it to the goal line. Okay, so that's the first thing I want you to remember. Your job is to pursue only those opportunities that are winnable in every way, that are right for you in every way. The other thing, and this is one that I'm actually going to be talking more about this soon, is the issue of sunk cost. So in business and economics, a sunk cost is a cost that's already been incurred but cannot be recovered. And those are the operative words there, cannot be recovered. And I know, and I've fallen into this trap many times, you've worked so hard to generate a lead or a prospect that you feel obligated to take them all the way to the finish line because you're looking at what? You're looking at your sunk cost. You're looking at all the effort you've put in, and it would be such a waste to not take it as far as it can go. The problem is, again, let's go back to the definition, sunk cost cannot be recovered. And in business and economics, one of the things you learn is you should not take into account a sunk cost. If you spent a lot of money trying to build this new division, for instance, and there comes a point when you realize this is not a viable business, this is not a viable approach or whatever, or product, you're better off shutting it down and cutting your losses than making the decisions to continue to press forward because you've already invested so much into it. Throwing bad money into a bad project or good money into a bad project is not going to make the project better. So keep that in mind. Ignore your sunk cost. Just because you spent a lot of time and energy recently prospecting doesn't mean that every one of those opportunities should be pursued. Okay, and then the final question from Nancy. She says, I'm having trouble getting motivated to work on my business and to market myself better. Yes, there's definitely some fear there. Call it procrastination, lack of motivation, or fear, but either way, it's not getting done. Any tips on how to get out of this type of funk? Yeah, it's a great question. I still struggle with that. How do you get back into something? So here's what I would say. Motivation is a fickle thing. Don't wait for it. So if you're relying on motivation to help you get started on something or help you complete a project, that's not a reliable source of energy, if you will. Motivation will only get you started. There's a saying, motivation will only get you started. Habits will get you going. So what's what research shows is that if motivation is really good to get you started, but the best time to get started is in the morning for a couple of reasons. One is most of us are a little fresher in the morning. And even if you're a night owl, the first thing in the morning, whatever first thing might be for you, let's say it's 11 o'clock, it's not so much about the energy, it's about the fact that your slate is clean. You're starting from scratch. So whatever you're procrastinating on, it's best to get done first thing. Eat that frog first thing in the morning. Again, whether that's 6 a.m. or 11 a.m., it doesn't really matter. First thing in your workday. When you get it done as your first item on your to-do list, it gets done. This is why this is a slightly different thing, but this is why I like to make doctor's appointments or dentist appointments, whatever, for first thing in the morning. At 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock appointment, guess what? Everyone's on time. Doctor's on time. You make an appointment for 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I guarantee you 80-90% of the time, they're behind. And very, very frustrating, right? So it's too much has already gone on, and now it just keeps getting thrown over the fence to the next appointment, and everything gets pushed back and back and back and back, and then you have to suffer the consequences. So don't rely on motivation. And if you're going to rely on motivation, only rely to take the first step, to get the process kickstarted, to start taking some kind of action, the just do it thing. Schedule it for first thing in your day. And then start with a micro step. So think about, just pick one thing you're procrastinating on and ask yourself, what is the smallest task that I could get going with regarding that project or that initiative or whatever it might be? What's one crazy simple thing that I could get started with? Just to give you the equivalent, and this is from the book Mini Habits. It's a great little book. He calls it the golden push-up. So if you're having trouble getting started with an exercise program, the way he talks about a micro step is think about doing one push-up today and commit to that. Not think about it. Put it as first thing in the morning, and that's your first task of the day, and it's going to be to get on the floor in your office and do one push-up. Can you do that? And the answer is, well, of course. I mean, if I can't even do that, how pathetic, you know, is that? So what will happen is you'll get down on the floor, you'll do one push-up, and guess what? If you're down there already, you're not just going to do one push-up. You'll do a few more. You know, you might do 15, 20, whatever you can handle. The point is when you trick your brain into thinking that, well, this is not going to take that much work. It's just, you know, I just got to do this little action step. You get it done. You're much more likely to get it done. So start with a micro step. Don't worry about, oh, but that's so little, I'm never going to make any progress. Right now, it's really not about making progress or completing the project. Right now, it's about greasing the skids so you can go ahead and get in and get started. So start with a micro step. Day two, you can keep adding to it. Day three, et cetera. The other thing is I found is deadlines are a blessing. As much as I hate them, deadlines help us get things done. So give yourself a deadline of some kind. It sounds like much of what you're struggling with is kind of internal stuff, maybe deploying some kind of marketing program. Maybe it's reworking your website copy, whatever it is. Stuff that, let's face it, it's important but not urgent, right? It's the Stephen Covey Quadrant 2 stuff. And if you give yourself a deadline, you're much more likely to get it done. If it's an artificial deadline, I would make it as real as possible. Make it so that you have skin in the game. One idea there would be to, let's just say, well, nobody's going to find out if I miss it. Okay, we'll put it out there. Put it out there either on Facebook and have friends hold you accountable, or contact a good friend and say, listen, I know you don't know really what I do, but I got this thing that I got to get done. I got to rewrite my website copy. Let's just use that as an example. And I keep putting it off. I need you to hold me accountable. And if you can set yourself up an alert to check with me by toward the end of day Friday, could you do that for me? It would really help me. If I know that you're going to check on me, I know I need to get it done because I don't want to embarrass myself. So notice it doesn't have to be someone who knows what you do for a living. It doesn't have to be a colleague. It could be a friend or a relative. That can really help with the deadline. So those are the things. If it's really more of a motivation thing, you're just trying to hack the system so that you actually get it done. The other thing would be if it's really more fear-driven, if it's really more of a confidence issue, because that's another flavor of procrastination. I want you to remember the four C's. I wrote about this recently in my newsletter. This comes from Dan Sullivan from Strategic Coach. He calls it the four C's. And the whole idea behind the four C's is most people feel like they need to have the confidence before they take an action, when it's kind of a fear-driven or confidence, low confidence-driven problem. And the problem is if you wait until you have the confidence, you'll never actually take the action. So the way to get confidence is through first making a commitment. That's the first C. Hey, I'm going to get this done by this date. When you do that, you will have the bit of courage that you need, not the full courage, but the bit of courage to go ahead and take the first step or two. Okay, so that's the second C, courage. Once you start taking those steps, the capability will come. Capability is the third C. By capability, I'm talking about, well, now you know what you need. Now you're developing the skill, or now you're getting into the groove. Okay, and with that will come the result, which will give you the confidence, which is the fourth C. So don't think of confidence as the first step. Think of confidence as actually the final step before you actually get momentum. Start with commitment. That's going to get you the courage you need. Take the first action, micro action like we talked about, which will then help you develop the capability, which will give you the momentum, in other words, to go ahead and work toward that result, which will give you the result, which will give you the confidence. So that's something that's also worked for me. Okay, great stuff. So, guys, it's an open flow right now, star two on your telephone keypad if you want to ask a question. Or if you're on today's call page, you can go ahead and type it in, and I'll read it and address it. Or, you can send me a telegram, whatever works. So let's see. We got a couple of questions that came in through the call page. One is from Janet. One is from David. So let's see. Janet says, lead generation program 8B was unable to find the walkthrough link. I did find a link to the convert kit, but I don't know. Okay. So Janet, this is, this is for the lead generation machine program. So this is completely different. So let me address this offline, and I'll make sure to get you, if you're missing something, that Crystal can point you to it or get it. I'm not sure why it would be missing. Okay. Yeah, so let me just make sure there's something else in here that if you had another question. All right, so yeah, Janet, I'll address that offline and make sure to we'll get you set up for sure. No worries. David says, I had several prospects this year who got detailed quotes from me, which took 4 to 8 hours to make for free, but they keep delaying the start of our project. I can't just keep being available indefinitely. What do you think of save the date clauses and proposals for prospects who can't start right away? If you're okay with them, what are some reasonable terms for them? When to introduce them? How much to charge for saving the date, etc.? Yeah, great question. So a couple of ideas. Let's address the save the date kind of situation. I would consider, if this is happening and continues to happen, put something in your agreement to that effect. And the way that I would word it is, if this is the kind of thing that, look, it's important that you save the time because otherwise you may not be able to get it done, then I would propose a start date for the program and just let them know in the proposal that you're going to block out, from, let's just throw a number in there, 6 to 8 weeks to get this done starting on, you know, June 1st, for example. Now, in terms of how you decide that date, this should be part of your qualification process. So in the timing question or the timing checkpoint, if you remember from the How to Qualify Prospects Effectively execution plan, that should be something you really need to clarify when you're qualifying the prospect and you're having that conversation. And then that way you can go ahead and put that in your proposal. And then you need to kind of make a big deal out of the fact that, you know, you're blocking out that time, and therefore you need to have a go-ahead or a signed contract by X date. Because if you're blocking that, that means you're blocking out time from being able to serve other clients. And if you make kind of a big deal about that, then what I find is clients or prospects typically understand that. You work in a capacity field where you have so much capacity, and if you're blocking it, people, reasonable people, understand that you can't do anything else then. I don't think you can necessarily charge for that time or do anything like that if they don't come through. I think the thing to do is to have a deadline by which you need to sign an agreement in order to block that. After that deadline, then you're able to make that time available for somebody else. Now, if they come through 3 days after and after the deadline, and you still don't have someone, another client for that time slot, then it's up to you. I mean, I would try to honor it, of course, since you do have that time available. But then if it's 3 days and somebody else has come through, then, I mean, that's the loss. So that's I would keep it simple like that. The second thing, though, is you might consider the fact that it took you so long to put together these proposals. I'm wondering if there might not be an opportunity for you to kind of break up your offers. So rather than because here's what I'm thinking, that it takes a long time to put these together because there's a lot you got to think through, and I wonder if there might not be an opportunity to offer two different things. One would be kind of a planning type of service, planning, road mapping. A white paper plan is a perfect example of that. White paper is a very complex project. The way I do them now and have done them for several years is now I break it up. I included kind of the planning, not kind of, I included the planning as part of my scope of work. Now I have splintered that off. That's its own offer, and I will not do a white paper without a white paper plan first, and I charge for that. So where I'm going with this is it might be something to consider. Offer kind of that road mapping or planning piece of the scope of work as a separate deliverable, separate project, and it's usually a low-cost thing depending on what you're going to include, et cetera. For a white paper plan, I charge $950. So not a lot of money, but it does two things. It allows me to take something that normally I would have included in the original scope of work and get paid for it. Number two, the prospect in the client in this case has skin in the game now because now they're treating the planning a little bit more serious. Number three, I don't no longer spend a ton of time putting together these proposals or fee agreements because a lot of that time is time that I'm now instead charging for in the road mapping or planning scope of work. That's a separate offer now. Number three, for the client, it's a lower risk option because they can get a lot of value from getting that plan as a deliverable or whatever it's going to be. And then if they really like it, then they can go ahead and hire you, or they can hire somebody else, or they could do it themselves or whatever. So it's you're adding a ton of value. And then it's prospects who aren't willing to do that, then it's probably a blessing in disguise because it's just telling you that they're not willing to pay for that. And if they're not willing to pay for that, even after you've presented it in a very valuable way, then maybe they're not the right prospect for you. So that just, you know, when I saw how long it takes to put these together, I'm thinking there might be an opportunity to instead templatize the planning or whatever the first phase is. I'll give you another example. Websites. website overhauls and refresh. I've worked with several startups, and they were a little bit bigger than just a startup, but the website they had was really from when they were just getting started. And now they've grown, and they needed to completely overhaul that. But the thing, they didn't know what they needed, how many pages, what these pages needed to accomplish, and so forth. So that's an opportunity. That used to take me a long time to figure out. I would spend hours putting a quote together. Now what I do is I charge separately for that service. It's the road mapping or the really the planning phase of the website from a content standpoint. And so that is its own deliverable. At the end, they end up getting, well, we work together on this, and the designer is usually involved on coming up with a sitemap. And now we know what we're dealing with. We have a concrete vision of the finished product, and I'm charging for that. It's great value add for them. It gives them clarity. And then I can quote the core part of the project that separately. And then I know what I'm quoting, and it's a lower risk thing for me and for them. So just something to consider there. Okay. Star 2, guys. Star 2, if you have a question, want to talk through an issue, need feedback on anything, it's an open floor right now if you got questions. All right, let's see. You got Robin. Hey, Robin. How's it going?
Hi, Ed. Good. It helps if you hit the star instead of the pound sign.
Yeah, pound. Pound.
Got
I don't think it's
nowhere.
Anything. Yeah.
All right.
How's it going? Where are you in Northeast or in Florida today?
I'm still in Florida.
Okay.
Still in Florida for probably another month. Then I'll head back up. So I have a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one I'll continue on where you just left off with the planning and the road mapping. I like the website overhaul thing. How much would you recommend that we charge for something like that?
You know, it needs to be, I'll say this, there's different philosophies on that. I find that generally it's better for it to not be a high profit offering. So in other words, keep it very reasonable, because what you're not trying to make all your money there. You're really trying to, it's really kind of a loss leader, especially at first. Where it can be more profitable is if you start doing a lot of them. And then you've templatized it to the point where all the initial work is just done in terms of your template and whatever you're delivering to the client. And now you're just looking at the situation, and you've kind of, it's very formulaic in your approach. But at first, the first few are going to be, you know, you're not going to make that much money. I like the idea of it being, you know, less than 10% of the overall project value or potential project value, but it depends. So notice with the white paper plan, for instance, $950. In that case, it's more like, you know, 20% for me of the project value. But that's because that tends to be a really big chunk of the overall value. Like you got to get that right. And then because of the number, it's not going to be a big number, the white paper itself. But there's still all this work you still have to do. So that's why it's a bigger percentage. For a website overhaul, I was charging a little bit, I was charging too little, frankly. It's charging $750. I think it could be a little bit higher than that. There's something about the $1,000 mark, though, I find that, you know, once you get over that, it starts feeling a little bit more like, you know, we have to get more approvals. But when it's under 1,000, then it's kind of a no-brainer. More people can sign off on it.
Okay. All right.
Does that resonate with you?
It does. I mean, I was just curious. Because I've had some that I've quoted a couple thousand for the website, and they're like, "Whoa, that's way too much money." So, but if I did an overhaul first and just left it at that, and then they could have gone on, I might have gotten the project.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, you know, the other thing there too is that it's, I kind of alluded to this, but it's easier to get smaller commitments from people, especially
mm-hmm.
when they don't know you yet, than it is bigger. I'd rather get 1,000 and then have a really good shot at getting the 5 or 10,000 than to go straight for the 5 or 10,000 and then have a lower close ratio.
Right. Yeah, usually when they contact me, though, it's because they've already had somebody else that they didn't like do their website.
Mm.
And so they're looking for an overhaul, a refresh. But I like the planning phase thing, like a sitemap, because that's what I offered them anyways, but I didn't charge for it.
Uh-huh.
I just made a suggestion in the proposal. So. Now I'll charge them.
Yeah, yeah. You just need to figure out from a pricing standpoint what would be easy. What do you feel would be easy for them to say yes to?
I'm thinking probably $450, $500.
Yeah.
Some of them.
I like $500, and don't be afraid of retail pricing like $495.
Right.
You know, it works.
Yeah. Okay. So the other question I have that goes somewhat along the same lines as planning and road mapping is I have this guy that I've been this company that I've been talking to for 15 months now. We're still on the books for talking.
Oh, my gosh.
But we're getting closer and closer. So we have we had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, and now we have another phone meeting the last week of May, and this one's to actually talk about my coming on site for a couple of days,
uh-huh.
to do some work with them. So, and they asked me what my day rate was, and I gave it to them, and they were fine, seemed fine with it. And then they asked me what did they need for materials to get to me, because I'm going to be creating a style guide at first, so I have to go in and get everybody on all the teams together, and we have to sit down and have, I told them we were going to have a sit down, knock down, drag out thing. You know, whose stuff is more important, why, and all this other stuff, because it's now 5 companies turning documentation into one style.
Mm-hmm.
So I told them what it would be, what the information is that I would need ahead of time, and which departments were going to be involved, especially at this meeting. But we didn't talk about, and I wasn't sure, is what's the best way to price the stuff that I'm going to be reviewing. Because like I said, I gave them a day rate to be on site.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to be talking about the pre-planning, the road mapping of all of this and what I need to look at.
So you have a day rate to be on site, but you got to review this stuff ahead of time?
Yes. Yep.
Do you have that material already?
No, I don't. I know there's going to be quite a bit of it. Because it's 3 different departments that they're going to be sending me, I think, a sample of each one of their documents.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have to plan out how we're going to do the in-house meeting, and it's a full-day meeting. And then once
okay.
I do that meeting, then I have to go back and put together a style guide.
So there's 3 different things. So there's the review
right.
of what they
yep.
have. Then there's
mm-hmm.
the one-day meeting, and then
right.
there's the putting together the style guide. So you
right.
got number 2 and number 3 you can figure out. Here's your question about number 1, though?
Yes.
Okay.
I think everything else after that is going to be an hourly, because they have Actually, the project's actually doubled from the last time we talked,
uh-huh.
which is really good.
Yeah.
But that will be an hourly thing, so that I'm not worried about.
Okay, and they're asking you, so it sounds like they understand that, you know, this is not going to be free. You are going to charge something for reviewing all of this, which is going to take quite a bit of time.
Yes, and they have worked with freelance writers in the past. This mm-hmm. particular guy has at his other company, so he knows how they work.
Okay. I mean, with all these kinds of things, this reminds me of this is kind of related to how much would you charge to edit my book kind of thing, right? With any of this, the only viable way of doing it, or the most viable way, really is to get some sort of sample of what they have
mm-hmm.
and then have a better understanding of how much of that they have. So here's a sample, and then and here's how much we have that you're going to need to review. The sample gives you an idea of the quality of what they have, how dense it is, how easy it is to get through, and all those things, right, all those questions. And then the how much they have will give you an idea of how much you need to review and think through. So you can't really do it without both. Otherwise, I mean, you could, but you'd be guessing. So I would want those two pieces of information. That's why I was asking if you had any of it yet, so you can get a better idea. So the same with a book. I'm just taking the similar approach. Well, can you send me a chapter, you know, so I can take a look? And then that's going to give you what you need to know in terms of, okay, how good or bad is this writer? And then how many chapters, you know, what's the full length of the book?
Okay, so these are technical documents.
Mm-hmm.
They are going to send me sample docs. They were supposed to. I haven't received them yet. And they've been written by the sales team, the help support help desk, and God only knows who else. And like I said, there's five different companies that are now all melded into one. And so we're going to be taking all this documentation and putting it in for making one style, complete style guide out of all of it.
Yeah, that's going to be, it's a big project.
That's
well, can you do both though? Can you get a you know, some sample? And I think if this guy has worked with a writer before, I think this is a very reasonable request and something he could understand why you're asking. So can you get some samples of what they have, and then get a much better idea of what they have that they're going to send your way?
Yes, he's supposed to send me some samples. I don't know if it's this week he's on vacation or next week, but I'm supposed to have them either by the time we meet at the end of the month, or he's going to send them to me right after that.
Okay.
That meeting at the end of the month, we were supposed to actually schedule when I was going to come in, but I told him I needed 1 to 2 weeks advance notice with sample docs first.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, once you get them, you know how to do that best, right? So you're not looking to read through every sentence, and you're not going to read every word. You're trying to identify patterns and get a really good sense for what everything is and how they connect, and then you start getting ideas of how you could maybe put all this together into one
mm-hmm.
style guide. So that's what you're looking for. So this is not – but you know that part. But you can't really – determine that without a sample, and then without knowing the total quantity as accurately as possible.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I would just quote them a flat fee for that, you know, and I think they would feel a little bit better about that. I would, as a client.
Right.
Because otherwise it's like, man, it's a blank check otherwise. Well, how you know, how long is it going to take?
So if there's a lot involved in it, would it be safe to charge him as much or a little more than my day rate, or keep it less?
Well, do you think that this is, based on what you know so far, do you think this is something you can review in a day?
No, absolutely not.
So you're only asking about day rate, and because it's going to be so many days at this rate?
Yeah, he was asking about the day rate because he wanted to pay me a daily rate to come out and work on site for their meeting.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of it would be project-based. Well, the discovery would be project-based, but then the rest of it after that, any of the work I do after that, because there'll be a lot of documents I'll have to write and update. And that
yeah.
He wants by the,
well, that's
the
fine. I mean, that's
right.
What he wants there.
Now
but
right.
The discovery, I think he might be better off just giving him a flat fee. Now, if he insists, no, well, I need, how many days is it going to be? I got to pay you a day rate, then that's fine.
I know, but what if it ends up being like 2 days? So it could be more than.
If it ends up taking you 2 days?
Yeah, I'm going to charge him like the same as the two-day rate, because the two-day rate, I actually charged a lot of money. I mean, the day rate, I charged a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
Because we're going to be locked in.
I mean, it's really up to you. I think this goes back to what I was saying earlier about make it easy for them to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
To these early, first steps, and because if you know you're going to have the deal, you think it's a 90%+ chance that you're going to get the contract, then I'd make it as easy as possible to keep that a high probability contract. So if you charge too much for that early work, that could throw a wrench in the whole thing, But it's up to you how you're looking at it. I like to look at the big picture and say, this is going to be whatever, let's throw a number, a $20,000 contract over the next few months. I'm not going to nickel and dime them here. I'll just get
charged.
No,
and I don't plan to either, because I'm hoping that I can get another project back down in like November, a specific project out of them as well.
Yeah, and keep in mind that many clients see, this is why I don't like breaking things up and itemizing, because many clients see this kind of like how reviewing what they have, they see that as a low value activity. So you can't typically, it's hard to get away with what you would typically charge for creating a deliverable for the review, if that makes sense.
Right, right.
So if your daily rate is really high, and as it should be for creating work, then it's going to be harder to justify psychologically. I mean, this really there's very little logic to this. It's just the way people think. It's going to be harder to justify, that 2 days at that rate for reviewing materials.
Okay. So I'm thinking, charge maybe half of that.
Yeah, and of course you got to feel good about it too. Like I wouldn't charge something that's gonna make me regret it. But yeah. So just think on it. But it sounds like you're approaching it the right way. It's got to be a balance. And again, I would never charge what we're talking about here. Say half your day rate. If that was it, this is really a bigger, much bigger opportunity. You're just making it easy for them to say yes to that.
Right. Okay. So the last question I have has to do with warm emails.
Mm-hmm.
And I had sent out a warm email 2 weeks ago saying that I was available next week because I had a cancellation of a big project. And some of them opened up the email and didn't reply, and then others opened and replied, and some of those that replied said that they would get back to me in the next week, and I've not heard back from them. So what's the best way to follow up with all of that?
I would follow up with all of them and just say, hey, this is still open if you're interested. Something along those lines, letting them know
that
it's an opportunity. I'm looking to fill it, you know, for kind of a, hey, this is still open. I'm not saying these should be your words, but this is still open, but, you know, it's first come, first serve. And you explained in your email that you had a cancellation, right?
Right. And that I needed them to reply back as soon as possible because I was going to be taking on, you know, opening it to two people.
Yeah, I think like it, and that's all I would do. I would send one follow-up email because after that it starts feeling like it's just too much. It loses the effectiveness. So I would go back to everyone who responded possibly and say, hey, this is still open, but I wouldn't say, but somebody else is thinking about it too. or you could say something to that effect. It's like I had a couple of people respond. Including you, but you know, I'm going to fill it with whoever takes it first, kind of thing.
Okay, so should I do that as a new email or a forward?
Oh no, I would continue the thread. Definitely continue the thread, so that they have the full thing and the full conversation there in front of them.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, that's good. Smart of you to do that.
And I actually had one. He sent me, he sent me like three or four emails and introduced me to two other people on his staff and said they'd get back to me, and one of them got back to me, and we booked a meeting, and then they decided at the last minute that they really wanted me to be on site instead of trying to do this online, and it was really low price. And she apologized when I said it was a bit too low. So
she apologized, and she said it was too low?
I had said to her, because she wanted a price for, like, to continue working on.
Oh, okay.
And I had asked what their budget was, and I said it was really too low for me to work on a project.
Yeah. Yeah, there
and
you go. That
she wrote back and apologized.
But good for you. I mean, it's really going back to what I said earlier, one of the questions about your job is not to take every opportunity to the finish line. Your job is to take the ones that are right for you to the finish line. And that's a great example of that.
Yeah, so the last couple of weeks, all I've been saying in my head and out loud is, Ed says you can't close what's not closable.
There you go. There you go, yeah. Good. Well, hey, good luck. Let us know if in the forum. Would love to hear how it goes with the with this big one and the review, what they end up accepting.
Okay. Yep. It's getting exciting because we're getting closer and closer after all this time.
Yes. Good for
and
you.
More and more positive.
You know,
and I am the only writer they're talking to.
Well, once it's a done deal, I'd love for you to post, just to, you know, it doesn't have to be anything like super detailed, but about just kind of following up with prospects long term, because that is a long time. But it goes to show that, you know, sometimes that's how long it takes. So it's all about just follow up and persistence, but not putting all your eggs in that basket either. You got to keep prospecting. You got to keep doing all these things. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so we've gone through, let's see, the CEO, some VP of something or other, some other title, and then they both left, and now this is the VP of engineering who I've been working with. Even though I met the other two in person at that event. And then they passed it up.
Oh, okay. Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, so like I said, this has been good because I've had a couple of meetings already with the new guy. Then we do Zoom meetings, so we're doing face-to-face for every meeting that we've been doing, which helps a lot, too.
Oh yeah, totally. Well, yeah, keep us posted, Robin. It's great to see that things are moving in the right direction.
Okay, Ed. Thank you.
Take care. You bet. Okay, guys, I got time for one more question. If anyone has anything quick, I got another call I got to take here at the top of the hour. I don't see anything else, but I just want to make sure, give you an opportunity in case you've been waiting to raise your hand. Again, star two, or you can just type it into the call page. Some great discussions today. Last call. All right, I don't see any other questions. We'll go ahead and wrap up. Again, we'll, as usual, we'll get this posted tomorrow in the Academy Platinum area for the coaching calls. And we'll get ahead and do a transcript of the questions that were asked, timestamp. So if you want to skip ahead, you can always do that. So great call today, guys. Enjoyed talking with you today, and we'll chat again next month. Have a great rest of the week. Take care.